This is Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports.
This is indeed Solly and Steve on Sports, the show dedicated to us ranting about sports, brought to you by the I-95 Sports and Entertainment Network and Mile High Radio in Denver. Solly and Jeff once again coming to you from the FedEx Studios.
Yep.
Steve and Dan are not here. Why?
Yep.
Why? We don't know. We were never given a good reason this week.
Never.
I wasn't. Did you hear anything?
Nope.
Didn't think so. All right.
Yep.
So we will try to get their thoughts on the sports world. Really, the only thing they had for us tonight was thoughts on a certain football league. We will get to that later on. We'll get to first half of the NHL later on.
If we have time, because there is a lot of things to talk about.
Yep. The three biggest ones being, let's see, Baseball Hall of Fame induction. Get to that later.
Yes.
The big announcement from Vince McMahon. Get to that later on.
It's a good thing we are recording today to talk about this announcement that Mr. McMahon has said.
But it does relate to a certain sport, which we're going to start the show off with right now. Championship weekend in the NFL.
I'm pretty sure you know what we're talking about, but we will discuss that
later
further down the road.
Yeah, at least as far as Vince McMahon is concerned, we will. But as far as the NFL is concerned,
we have a Super Bowl.
And it feels like we went back in time 13 years.
It feels like the more things change, they all stay the same.
It's a rematch of Super Bowl 39. It's the Eagles and the Patriots. The Patriots quarterback-coach combination is exactly the same. The Eagles is not. The Patriots game was actually the more entertaining and more evenly matched game of the two on the weekend.
Yes.
As New England walked away with a 24-20 win over Jacksonville.
And Sad, but true.
I will give the Jaguars a lot of credit. They actually hung into this game a lot more than I thought they would.
They had the lead throughout most of the game.
Yeah.
They played some great defense. They had some good offense in the first half.
They were up 14-10 at halftime.
They made some great plays, but, I mean, it was 20-10 by the time the fourth quarter rolled around. And, again, Brady and the Patriots, you never count them out until the clock hits zero. And I don't know what happened when Jacksonville could not hold a 3rd and 18.
Yep, that turned the game, in my opinion.
Me too. That was the first thing I basically heard when I finished my job, whatever.
Yeah, you're
yeah
working for the
sorry,
day.
little brain faux pas
no,
there.
No, it's okay.
No, but like when I got in the car after work, the Patriots were trying to drive, and it was a 3rd and 18, and the first thing was that play that Jacksonville couldn't cash in, and it was all downhill from there.
That was the first time New England had converted on a third down all day.
Yeah, they did not have a good third down luck at all. I just know it was very poor.
Well, that
quite a time.
New England also had to play without Rob Gronkowski most of the day. He got hurt in the first half. He got a concussion. No guarantee whether or not he will be ready by the Super Bowl. Gronk had one catch for 21 yards.
Who cares?
Yeah. Brandon Cook stepped up in his absence. 6 catches, 100 yards.
And when it mattered most, the Patriots' defense, while still not the best, made plays.
Yes, they did.
And the Patriots kept on pinning Jacksonville very deep in their own zone and couldn't do a whole lot. I mean, like that last drive where, like before the Patriots took over, I remember that Jacksonville was pinned very deep and the punter didn't even punt it into the Patriots' zone.
He couldn't.
No, he couldn't because of it. And basically, the Patriots started around their 35-yard line, if I remember.
Yep, there was that. And there was that sick catch that the go-ahead touchdown that Danny Amendola scored with about 2:48 left.
I mean, if you're the receiver covering him, and like you see him jumping and catching, can you push him out of the end zone before he lands?
Well, I think he tried to, but somehow, and I'll give Amendola all the credit in the world for this, he managed to be able to get both feet in balance and hang on to the football.
It was sickening listening to that fourth quarter and hearing the Patriots coming back to win.
And just sitting there watching it was like, oh my God, why is this happening? It's like, it's the worst nightmare of like every NFL fan that doesn't live in the New England area.
Yep.
Because speaking from the perspective of a Jet fan, it drives me crazy because they win all the time.
I mean, it would have been nice to have Dan on the show for him to, for us to hear what he had to say about this. And, you know, he'll probably say that, again, Brady's the greatest of all time. Yep. And, like, you can't count the Patriots out. But still, to hear the enthusiasm of another Patriots Super Bowl return.
Yeah. Tenth time the Pats have made the Super Bowl. Eighth time with Brady and Belichick as head coach and quarterback, respectively.
Yes.
The previous two were in 85, they lost to the Bears, and 96, they lost to the Packers.
Yes.
Every other time has been with Tom Brady, quarterback, and Bill Belichick as head coach. And Danny now has a book in his possession that will make the argument for Tom Brady being the greatest quarterback of all time. The book is titled Tom Brady versus the NFL. The only reason I even know that is because I bought it for him for Christmas. It's like I saw it, and I'm like, that has Danny written all over it.
Yeah.
So, Danny, if you're listening to this, next time you're on the show, bring the book with you. Just because I know that's your style, bring it with you, please.
I mean, look, there's no question of a doubt anymore. So it's just more about preference, and now it's all a generational view.
Yeah, but then again, I don't know.
For any debate to be the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
I mean.
The debate's ended.
No, it doesn't matter if the debate ends or not. The debate now is no debate because our best quarterback of all time is going to be Brady, where probably like your parents or, you know, someone who's much older still might say Montana because that's who they idolized when they were children.
Yeah,
and Montana was theirs. Or someone might still think of Unitas or
Roger Staubach or Terry Bradshaw.
Exactly. I know, not that Bradshaw. Bradshaw had those great defenses.
Yeah. I mean, the one argument that people can still hold
watch
over...
me be a total walking contradiction with that one.
Yeah, I know. Trust me, I know. But then, yeah, but at the same time, though, the argument that I think people can still possibly even remotely hold over Brady's head as to why Montana might be the better quarterback is Montana never lost in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, but also...
Brady's got two losses.
Yeah, but still, Montana also lost in other rounds, and that doesn't count. Brady lost in other rounds as well.
Yeah, he did.
Does that count?
The Jets beat him one year.
So it's just that, yes, we understand, in the biggest stage of them all, the championship round, the Super Bowl of all bowls, I guess if you want to say it like that. Yes, I understand that Montana is clean there. But, you know, in the NFC championship games, he lost. And even rounds before that, he lost.
Yes, and we're
not talking about that.
I know.
It's just a lot of factors and, you know, also the style of NFL that's being played and, you know, all the rule changes between Montana and Brady. So I'd rather not have it up for debate because, again, it's just a generational thing. Dan's going to say that Brady's the best of all time because he's never seen Montana play.
Right. Neither have we.
Exactly.
And just an FYI, I was kind of curious about this. From the turn of the century in 2000, we've had four total quarterbacks, or five, rather.
Okay, yeah, because you have to include Trent Dilfer.
No. I mean, that represented the AFC. All right, six. You had Kurt Warner with the Rams.
Wow, okay, let's keep on adding them, huh?
No, it's Kurt Warner with the Rams, Trent Dilfer, Tom Brady.
Rams or NFC.
All right, sorry. No, you had the Titans beat the Rams. They had, who was the Titans quarterback that year? Now that's going to bug the crap out of me. 99 Tennessee Titans... I'm trying to blank on it now. Damn it.
It's not McNair, is it?
Actually, it was. You're right.
Hey, look at that.
Yeah, so it was Steve McNair. You had Trent Dilfer. You had Rich Gannon of the Bucs. Then it's either been Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Joe Flacco, who had the one Super Bowl when they beat the Niners, and Ben Roethlisberger. That's been it. Those are your AFC quarterbacks from the turn of the century.
I mean, it would have been more impressive if you did not include Aaron McNair and Gannon.
Trust me, I know.
But, you know.
Yeah.
Que sera, sera.
And a lot of people have been now criticizing the NFL and criticizing the referees in this game for the distribution, if you will, of penalty calls. Because there was only one penalty called against New England as compared to eight called against Jacksonville. So some people are claiming that the refs wanted New England to play in this game, which I find to be complete bull. It's complete crap because, honestly, it wasn't the refs' fault that Jacksonville kept taking too many penalties in this football game. The Jaguars did that to themselves.
I think I remember one where it was completely missed or there was like really non-call, though, that was called.
Well, there was also one premature whistle in the football game, too. And
I'm not saying that, like, it just that things happen or, like, somehow the ref saw it differently. I mean, I don't know, but it's still, you can't blame the refs when you are winning 20-10 in the fourth quarter.
And you can't hold the lead.
Well, that's still on you. The refs did not do a damn thing to prevent
Jacksonville losing.
Well, thanks for trying to put words in my mouth because that wasn't what I was going to say.
Okay.
You know, the refs didn't help the Patriots overcome the 3rd-and-18.
Very true.
You know, the refs didn't help them stopping a horrible punt return when they were pinned to their end zone.
There is one argument you could make, though.
What?
The refs blowing the whistle way too early with about 11:49 to go in the football game on the Miles Jack strip of Deion Lewis. Because the ball was clearly stripped. Lewis got stripped of the ball. Miles Jack took off running, but the refs blew the ball, blew the whistle and blew the play dead way too quickly.
Yeah, and I know. There was little issues. But still, you're still in the lead.
Yeah.
You couldn't make the stop again?
No. For 3rd-and-18, if they'd stopped him on 3rd-and-18, that would have been it.
Yeah, but I mean, it would have been it, but it would have been a whole lot better. I mean, Jacksonville would have had better field position.
Right.
I mean, who knows what would have happened from there? I mean, you could have, like, done some you would have definitely more room for error in terms of, like, you know, play selection. You can really utilize Fournette in the middle of the field instead of all the way pinned back.
Well, they had used Fournette to a solid degree in the first half. He had 28. Well, throughout the game, he finished with 26 carries for 78 yards and a touchdown.
All right. Enough about that because we just know that the better team won. We all knew that the Patriots were the better team. Jacksonville is a young, talented team that has a bright future.
They do.
And we'll see if Jacksonville can keep on making progress and keep on developing and hopefully make it to the Super Bowl.
And they've got a shot to do. They've got a shot to do that in the future. The future is very bright with that Jaguars team.
Yes.
And unfortunately, the dream died for Minnesota.
It sure did.
They went into Philadelphia and got absolutely spanked, 38-7 by the Eagles.
I mean, Minnesota even scored the opening drive.
Yep, 25-yard touchdown pass to Kyle Rudolph. But an interesting stat that they had said during the game. They mentioned this stat already as Philadelphia was pulling away. That a team that plays in a dome that has had to go to an outdoor stadium for the championship game is now 0-13.
Yeah, okay.
So
you can pull a lot of stats and things like that. I mean, like, for goodness sakes, we did this whole, like, those Blake Bortles facts during the week up to the AFC championship game.
Yes, we did.
So, like, you can always make a stat out of anything.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, I understand that that's a more notable one, the 0-13 for dome teams. But come on, I mean, dome teams have won in like those in December games and stuff like that.
Yeah, but they've never won in a conference championship playing outdoors.
It's going to happen sooner or later, and then we can stop saying that. Oh, no, we're going to say they're just one and whatever.
Yeah, and you would have thought that, especially after the Rudolph touchdown, the momentum would have kept going on Minnesota's side.
Nope, that's what I said.
Very next drive. Patrick Robinson gets a pick six off Case Keenum, and that pretty much ended any hope for Minnesota there.
Well, that's what I basically said going into this game with the prediction. The whole, I know you're talking about after that first touchdown, and I'm talking about the game-winning touchdown in the divisional game.
Yeah.
But that was such an emotional high
that
it just was not going to be in the cards for Minnesota.
And ironically enough, that one touchdown catch that Kyle Rudolph had was his only catch in the afternoon.
Good for him.
And the fact that you kept Kyle Rudolph, who's one of the better tight ends in the game, in check the entire day is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I mean, Minnesota couldn't keep up with the changes and schemes that Philadelphia had. I mean, they couldn't even stop the flea flicker from happening.
Alshon Jeffrey scored twice, which is a nice improvement for him, considering that some people thought he'd lost a step after the Bears got rid of him. But Jeffrey goes, nah, I'm still a pretty good wide receiver. I'm still a pretty good deep threat. Scored twice. I'm going to a Super Bowl. You're not.
Yeah, so.
And I thought it was funny how some people were commenting on social media that the only way that Tony Romo was going to get to a conference championship game was by calling it for CBS.
That is true.
I did get a kick out of that. I thought that was pretty funny.
That's a smart bunch of people right there.
Yeah.
You smart Alex, you trolls.
Yeah. But I will say this much. Did you see some of the reactions of Eagles fans to Vikings fans walking into...
Oh, there are just horrible people.
I know. That was one of the big stories was on the weekend, was how Eagles fans were reacting to it. And I'm not saying all Eagle fans are like that. I'm friends
with, but there's a handful.
There's more than enough.
Yeah. You could definitely say... I would feel comfortable in saying you got more than half.
Yeah. And it's safe to say that Chris Jericho would be used quite poignantly right now in calling some segments of his Eagles fan base stupid idiots.
Exactly. Like when they also mentioned about... I like how we're talking about the fans and not the whole game overall.
Oh, why? Because the game was a blowout.
But still, like when the... Like, the week prior to the Minnesota game, they showed, like, this 90-plus or
99-year-old woman.
I think her name was Millie.
It was.
And Pittsburgh fans got a sniff of that and were just chanting, telling her to do some reprehensible things over and over again in unison.
Yeah.
So that fan base is just known for being totally crass and very vulgar.
Yeah, they are. But
punching horses, throwing snowballs or batteries.
Like punching horses.
Yeah, there are some things about that. I remember hearing that being brought up on air.
Police horses, yes. All right.
And also with Santa Claus and all that type of stuff.
Yep. They've been known to throw snowballs at Santa Claus in the past. That was interesting. I mean, we'll also get into a full breakdown of the Super Bowl next week on the show.
Yeah, because
you're not
going
to get enough
things.
Of that over the next 2 weeks.
Yeah. So it's just horrible that Philadelphia fans and that's why I'm just gonna throw this right now that I do want to see Philadelphia win just because of the Philadelphia Eagles, but I don't want the Philadelphia Eagles to win because
of the fan base.
Right, their fan base is putrid and don't deserve a championship until they act more
professionally.
Fans will never act professionally, but not telling an old lady to just, you know,
So out of the four Philly sports franchises, I think the Eagle fans might be the worst of the bunch. Flyer fans aren't much better.
Oh, no, Flyer fans are... I don't want to keep on dissing fans and stuff like that, because it's going to come and bite us in the ass sooner or later.
I know, but... we'll leave it at that.
Yeah, but it's still true, though.
Yeah. I'm not... It's... some of the stuff I heard and saw, I'm like, I can't condone. I can't back up my fellow fans for that of any sport. No.
Exactly.
So now that we got that out of the way with championship weekend.
I know. We took a few minutes for the other game because, as we said, it's a blowout. Like, what else can we say? Yeah. I mean, congratulations, Nick Foles. You made it to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, after getting bounced around to a couple of different teams since getting exiled out of Philadelphia for Sam Bradford.
Yeah. Just imagine that turnaround story. Who saw that one? And as everyone thought that after Wentz was a goner this season, that Nick Foles, of all quarterbacks, would carry Philadelphia to the Super Bowl.
I know.
They have a pretty balanced team overall.
Yeah. Oh, they do.
Yeah, their defense, like, after, like, that offensive output that Minnesota had, I know it wasn't as big as Jacksonville in the divisional round, but still, like, you still put up 24 points. And to shut down that and shut down the momentum that Minnesota had overall and also to have an offense that has a great running game, a quarterback that knows what he's doing, and receivers that also can really catch the ball and make plays. Even though they're going to be the underdog in the Super Bowl, you can't count Philadelphia out.
No, you can't. That's why getting Jay Ajayi around Christmas, I think, was huge. That was a big pickup, and it helped balance out.
Ajayi was traded much earlier.
I know, Christmas. It was around Halloween. Yeah. Ajayi got traded.
Yeah.
So getting Jay Ajayi in the first place was huge, and
yeah, compliments
said,
compliments to the whole GM and staff of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah, I will say this much though: since we were talking about quarterbacks, Minnesota might have a problem next year. Because the three guys that they've had played quarterback over the last two seasons, Teddy Bridgewater, Sam Bradford, and Case Keenum, all free agents, do it as of the Monday after the Super Bowl.
Are you really thinking that they're all three are going to go bye-bye?
No, I'm just saying that you might want to. Might be a good idea if you get on signing one of them, or at least two of them.
I mean, also, and you have the head, head coach or offensive coordinator?
Offensive coordinator, yeah. Pat Shermer is now the Giants head coach.
Yes. So the guy who helped resurrect Case Keenum is no longer there.
Which is gonna be a big bugaboo for Minnesota next year. Yeah. But
I mean, who knows? I mean, I, I, f- feel like Bridgewater is going to be there. I don't think he's going to be. He's going to have a high command in terms of price. He's not going to get paid as much as people think he's, or as much as he thinks he's going to get.
Yeah. So we had that going on.
Yeah. So you know, and he has to prove himself that he can still be that quarterback. Because again, Case Keenum beat him.
Yep.
And they didn't want to go to Bridgewater.
Well, Bridgewater was coming off injury, right?
Yeah. Because of the way that Keenum was playing throughout the year.
So it's like if he's got the hot hand, why bother?
Exactly.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Yeah. Stick with him. And so that there are, got him here.
So this would have been the year for Minnesota, but alas, it's not. And Minnesota has to see those Eagle fans cheering in their own stadium. So just a lot. It's going to be a lot of salt.
Yeah.
A whole lot of salt in Minnesota.
If Philadelphia pulls off the win.
Well, even if throughout the week during media day and during the whole
the build up to the game,
yeah, the build up to the game with the fans and all the whole fan fest and stuff like that, I bet you'll have a lot more Philadelphia fans there anyways, because you know this is all ho hum to Patriots fans,
and that's just adding salt in the wounds to the Vikings.
Yeah, seeing all those Eagle jerseys surrounding the stadium and surrounding the convention center and the hotels and all those hotel people having to smile with seeing a family with Philadelphia Eagles jerseys so happy to be there because their team's in the Super Bowl.
And mine isn't.
Yes.
It's gonna suck.
It's going to be a whole Salt Lick there.
Yep. Which is why I think we're...
Salt Lake City has actually moved to Minneapolis.
Yep. And as if things couldn't get crazy enough in football over the last couple of weeks. And... Well, I think this could be the perfect week for this announcement to come down since this is the lull between championship weekend and Super Bowl weekend. The XFL is back! It was announced at 3 o'clock today. Vince McMahon has brought back the XFL. Kickoff is slated for January of 2020. And at first when I heard about it, I didn't get the chance to listen to the press conference today. But I have since, I didn't get to, well.
Yeah, no, you've heard the press conference.
Yeah, no, I didn't hear it as it happened.
Me neither. But, yeah, so, you know, it was available, we heard it.
Yep, when I first heard the announcement, I'm thinking to myself, great, he's going to do the same thing he did with the last XFL.
And that's what was going on in the group chat. Most were thinking that it was going to be another XFL a la 2001 with the whole.
Which was a complete fail.
Yeah, I mean, there were several factors. If you didn't see the XFL 30 for 30 documentary on ESPN,
which was fantastic.
It was very good. There are a lot of reasons why that XFL failed with lack of preparation, lack of study. The whole, we got to throw in the whole WWE vibe in there with because it was still during the Attitude Era. The whole issues with the generator.
It was just poorly planned and poorly executed.
Having to be on a primetime network on a primetime night on Saturday night.
Yep.
So there was a lot of things that went against this XFL. And it seems like that this vision that Vince is having is going to be a much smarter, because first thing is that it's going to take 2 years. And Vince wants people to chime in on what would make a better version of a football, professional football league.
It's because he wants input from players, management, fans. He wants the fan perspective on how to possibly be able to make the game better than the inclination and incarnation we got in 2001.
So basically he created a need that we never thought we would ever need again.
Yeah.
But as he said, that there is a lot of lull in professional football. I mean, yes, there is the CFL, but that's not really... And the Arena League is dwindling by the year anyways. I mean, there's like probably like six teams, if I remember, hearing or so. So there is, Vince is saying, a need for possible, after the Super Bowl, more football, more professional football going on after that, because there is a whole lot of fans that crave for football once that time rolls around. And it seems like the XFL has seen an opportunity to go right into it. And the press conference seemed to me to be very positive overall.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll give Vince McMahon credit for saying all the right things and that, yes, he wants to try to the league to be more family friendly, fan friendly, and shorter. They're going to have less commercial timeouts, maybe a shorter halftime, maybe no halftime. That's why I'm giving Vince a lot more credit this time around than I did the last time because he's taking 2 years to work it out.
I kind of find it a bit hypocritical when Vince is saying that, you know, watching something for 3.5 hours is too long. Meanwhile, he has WWE pay-per-views that are now, like the Royal Rumble coming up this weekend, 4 hours long.
WrestleMania last year was five.
Five. And you have Monday Night Raw being 3+ hours
weekly.
Every single week. Yeah. That's kind of funny for me to think like that.
I know. It is. And
but I guess that's sports entertainment, so you gotta take more entertainment and not real sports and whatever.
No, it's Vince, it's the same damn thing.
Yeah, I know. But his vision, let's go over some of the plot points that he said here. So let me just quickly have this up.
Go ahead, what do we got?
Things are coming to the XFL, the revisioned XFL, I should say.
Okay.
That it's going to start with 8 teams.
Okay.
They're not going to be franchises. They're all going to be owned by Alpha Sports, I want to believe.
Alpha Entertainment, thank you. Which, by the way, is run by Vince McMahon. The only reason he got the money together for it was because he sold a ton of stock from WWE.
$100 million worth of stock.
There you go. That's what founded Alpha Entertainment, and they are going to fund the league and the teams. So you won't have like individual owners and running the franchises. Vince is going to basically...
It's all on Vince because when there's all these franchises, then you got to have a commissioner and you got to have all this other stuff. So he felt like that the buck stops with him.
Yeah, Vince is like, the hell with this. I'm not going to make the same mistake the NFL is. I'm running everything. It's my word or the highway. Continue.
Exactly, and we'll bring that up later on.
Yes.
So 8 teams overall. There is going to be a 40-man roster. So a little bit less than your 52 or so that's going on in the NFL. Starting in January of 2020, it's going to be a 10-game season. So that's probably a really good, realistic way to start. I don't think you can really go that long and stuff, because then when you start in January, keep on going, you're really going to bleed into the NHL and NBA playoffs.
Right, which I know Vince doesn't want to do.
Yes, which is also going to comprise of a 4-team playoffs with 2 semifinals and the championship round. His goal is that each game is going to last 2 hours. Now that's a goal, he said. I don't like how this plot point said that this is a definitive thing. Okay. I don't think you can have an NFL professional football game, I should say, be short as 2 hours.
I don't think so either.
With 15 quarters and the way
15-minute quarters? No.
Yeah, 15-minute quarters. Thank you. Right now, I can see it being 2.5 if they do it right. Another thing that is, he wants to try to simplify the rules, which is a thing that NFL fans have wanted for several years now.
Biggest thing being, what is a catch? Thank you!
Exactly. And all these penalty rules and all that type of stuff. He's going to, as we said, use these experts to help simplify the rules and make things more convenient. Another thing is that any player with a criminal record that has happened before or during the XFL will no longer be a part of the XFL. So he wants to have this thing of, look, if you want to play, you got to be a clean slate. We don't want to have these whole criminal activities. And this thing's another point that's bringing the NFL down are these criminal procedures like we have with Ezekiel Elliott. I mean, he's not convicted. Yeah. He's not persecuted or has been,
found guilty
of it yet. But do we really want to go through that over and over again? It's the hard line of you have a DUI, you're out.
Robbie Anderson would be out of the XFL right now.
Exactly.
We talked about that last week with him getting arrested.
Exactly.
So he's out. Johnny Manziel, although I've heard his name's thrown around.
His name's thrown around, and he hasn't been found guilty of anything.
But he's on the record for a possible DUI, so I think that may cause problems. So for Johnny Manziel, if the XFL doesn't work, he's got the Canadian League. I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, he wants to be part of it. He released a hashtag XFL 2020. You know, at Vince McMahon, so, you know.
He wants to play football. I'll give him that.
Another thing is that some people ask if there's going to be any crossover with WWE or possibly WWE broadcast talent.
I hope not.
He said no.
Good.
He said there's going to be no crossover. So, you know, back then with the whole, you had JR, you had Jesse Ventura. You're not going to hear them. He really wants to separate the XFL from the WWE. That is one of the things that he's learned from this, is to not really bring that type of style over.
Yeah. It's let the football action stay on the field where it belongs, and let it be pure football. Yeah. Leave WWE as its own entity, and leave the XFL as its own.
And that is what he said constantly over and over and over again in this press conference.
Because everybody kept asking him about it. So it's like, look, WWE is one thing, that's going to stay WWE. The XFL is another.
And he's still going to be the CEO and head of creative and stuff.
Yeah. Which, man,
we'll see how that goes on.
Yeah, I'm gonna wonder though how much the WWE product is gonna be affected by the XFL, and it wouldn't surprise me if there's a conflict there and Vince spends all his time with the XFL, Triple H takes over running WWE.
Yeah, another thing is that we don't know where the teams are gonna be located right now.
Haven't announced that yet either.
No, they are doing research, but he wants to have teams play in things that are set up for NFL. I don't know if they're going to be in these big stadiums and things like that, because he would like to show arenas that are sold out.
Yeah.
And the NFL is still new and young that I don't think...
NFL?
I mean, the XFL.
Okay.
Like, no, but still, like, the NFL arenas.
Yeah.
If they play games in NFL arenas, do you really want to have the potential of seeing a half... filled stadium or even a quarter filled stadium?
I don't even want to see a quarter filled MetLife Stadium for XFL games.
Yeah,
so
they're looking to the opportunities.
So do it like college stadiums.
Maybe college. No.
Well, do it like Hofstra.
Certain college stadiums.
Like, do it like Hofstra.
Because if you think there's going to be one in Michigan and you think about.
At the Big House? Please.
No. See, so that's what I'm saying.
The Big House.
You got to pick your words right with that one.
Yeah, no, it's the Big House at the University of Michigan. They had 110,000 people there a couple of years.
Yeah, yeah.
They host like 80,000 people for 100,000,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, no. So, but. He's looking into all those areas, but he wants to be in like areas that have already football stadiums in them, so that you can have some great football games to be played at and have it all filled up.
Exactly. Now we also have thoughts from Steve and Danny.
Wait, I'm still going. No, yeah, I'm still going.
Oh, go right ahead.
Because we didn't bring up this point though,
and that is
that players won't receive the forum to take personal stance on social issues while on the playing field.
Good. He basically said that politics is politics. We're keeping it out. We're going to focus strictly on football. And Vince, I love you for that.
Well, he also said that that they can express themselves off the field and other things like that. But that's one of the other things that he's seen from the NFL, which has caused problems. And also, like, these controversies that cause a black eye, where the whole Colin Kaepernick thing, yes, it's a good stance, and yes, it means everything, but it's also has this negative turn where it just formed its own story about who's patriotic and who's not, even though it's a necessary conversation, you're there to watch football,
not involved in politics.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's such a tough stance, but you have to understand both sides of why this is happening, why Vince thinks this is the way it should go and whatnot.
And again, it's a cool stance. It's a cool idea to take a stand for something you believe in and do what Colin Kaepernick did and use a forum such as sports to take activism against it. But for it playing out as long as it did, I think was too much, and which is why I think, and I give credit to Vince for putting the kibosh on that right now, 2 years before kickoff.
So this is what he said on it, though. People don't want social and political issues coming into play when they are trying to be entertained. We want someone who wants to take a knee to do their version of that on their personal time. Unquote. So as he said, that these are all going to be like in these rules and terms of services or whatever, that it's going to be called the code of conduct. And if you sign up to be a part of the XFL, you basically agree to these this code of conduct.
Yeah.
I think I heard this is speculation and stuff like that, that they probably want these players to sign, like, he wants this to be like a 365 type of thing, so even players, like, they hope that the players won't sign one-year contracts, so once the season's done, that they want to be signed by the NFL.
It's not like, okay, our 10 weeks is up, we're done with the playoffs, you can go play in the NFL now. No. You're property of the XFL for the entire year. You cannot go play.
No, don't say property.
Okay, you play for the XFL. You can't go play
in the
NFL.
You're a member of the XFL. You should be proud that you are a member of the XFL.
Yeah.
And we would like to have you here for a few years and continue to be a proud member of the XFL.
So unofficially saying you play for the XFL, no NFL, no Arena League, no CFL.
Yeah.
So,
but he also, he hasn't mentioned about, like, someone asked him about Colin Kaepernick, and he said that you know, if he wants to play for the he didn't directly say about Kaepernick, but yeah. he basically didn't discredit him.
He didn't say no, but he didn't say yes either.
Yeah, because then
it's a we'll see kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, look, they have 2 years. We'll see where Kaepernick is also after 2 years if he wants to still want to play football. I mean, the only person that he really mentioned, McMahon, was Tim Tebow.
Yeah.
Because he knows that Tebow is a clean slate and he is a man of character.
Yeah, and
so if he still wants to play, he has the opportunity to try out the XFL, even though Tim Tebow will probably be around age 30 or 31 by the time it starts.
And not only that, but he might still be playing minor league baseball with the New York Mets by that time.
I mean,
so who knows? Yeah. But I will say this much. There's two things that I think most people took away from the original XFL. One is the quarterback for the Los Angeles Extreme, who were the only team to win an XFL championship, went on to win a Super Bowl a few years later. That was Tommy Maddox. He was Ben Roethlisberger's backup when the Steelers won their Super Bowl with Big Ben at quarterback. And everybody still talks about this to this day with the XFL. Rod Smart, the running back for Las Vegas. Why? The nickname on the back of his jersey. He hate me.
And that's another thing that Vince hasn't really decided yet on what to do with the names on the jerseys. I think this was just more about we are set up to make the announcement that this is coming back and we're taking 2 years. That there's no definitive stuff like that.
Yeah, it's just...
But here's another good quote, though.
Okay.
Is another reason why the XFL has a better chance of succeeding today than it did back then. It said that... quote, to me, the landscape has changed in so many different ways. Just look at the technology and companies like Facebook and Amazon bidding for sports rights. Even if ratings goes down, there's no denying that live sports rights continues to be a valuable and always delivers. Well, the last part I flubbed or just went off the beaten path. But that's
fine.
Let me just say that again. There's no denying that live sports continue to be valuable and continue to deliver, which is true.
Yeah.
There's really nothing like watching live sports.
No.
At all.
There's nothing really.
And there's different avenues for watching all these live sports, like as you see Facebook and Amazon or Twitter trying to get onto the live sports bandwagon.
Yeah, we've got
basically, cable TV is not the end-all, be-all to watch something.
And somebody else had brought this up during the press conference today as to whether or not Vince was going to utilize the WWE Network as another branding platform for the XFL. He said that's a distinct possibility. And I'd still be willing to bet that they're going to try to find a major cable network to go along with them. I mean, Disney already has like ABC, ESPN... CBS already has NFL coverage, NBC, Fox. So you're pretty much limited to like CW Network, maybe.
I don't know. I mean, there's some speculation through one radio show that it could be like on USA Network because
I've heard that too.
Because if you think about it, the ratings for Raw, like basically USA is thriving because of the Raw ratings, which are usually around like 2 million, 3 million people or so.
And they're also
you just need that to easily.
Kickstart it,
you can probably get a few million people just to watch the XFL. I mean, like, you had a boatload of people watching the old XFL, even when it was during its dying legs at the end of the season.
And most of them were diehard wrestling fans.
Yeah, well, it doesn't matter about that, but it's just a start-off point. Yeah, no, but like, you can thrive on a smaller network with just 2 or 3 million people just watching a sporting event.
Yeah. I mean, USA is trying to expand their sports coverage anyway, so this is a good start.
And here's one more thing, though, that he said. I don't think people want to see the same thing when they are streaming as they see on television. That's boring. I think fans want it shot in a totally different way, and I think there's an immersive opportunity that's more interactive to the game.
Which is why, again, I'm much more looking forward to what Vince has got planned in 2 years from now. Because the last one, he threw together in less than a year, and the product sucked. This one, I think, is going to be way better.
You got to give credit for one thing the XFL did right.
Which was
that overhead cam.
The RoboCams, yeah.
The RoboCam and you know, the guys going on the field to shoot, basically face up on what the players were doing. And again, as we said, the RoboCam flying overhead
which the NFL has started using now.
They've been using it for since then. So Vince has always had a foresight for technology advancement,
and I'll give Vince a ton of credit in the world for that,
and he still sees that right now.
Yeah,
so I mean, for goodness sakes, like, he had the whole foresight for pay-per-views.
Yeah, and look how big the pay-per-view business is. We got one coming up Sunday in the Royal Rumble.
Well, I mean, that's a whole network thing as well.
Yeah.
I don't say he's a big foresight on that, on streaming and you know things like that, but he definitely jumped on and has been doing pretty well as a matter of fact. I mean, who knows? Maybe you might have your own XFL network.
We could.
There is a possibility. It's like you can watch it on your TV like for free, or you can do the XFL network where you can get all these other multiple options to watch it. Let's have this thought about, you know, you can have different type of broadcasts. Yeah. I think that was another thing that he brought up, or it was speculated or something like that.
Which was?
No, like with different language broadcasts.
Yeah.
Like if you want to do that, or maybe like you can control what camera angle you want to see.
Yeah. I mean, he could take some of the stuff he's doing with WWE programming as far as how it's presented, and could take that and use that with the XFL as a new way to look at watching football.
Yes.
It could. Again, in theory, it could work, but who knows if it's going to work in practice.
No, yeah, exactly. But, I mean, I don't... This probably could be the right time for it, honestly.
Well, Danny and Steve have their thoughts on the XFL. You'll give Steve's in a second. I'll start with Danny's.
Oh, Dan finally gave his thoughts?
Yeah, Dan's... It was on the XFL only, but Dan's got his thoughts on it. He goes, The XFL coming back is one of the greatest things to ever happen in sports history. I didn't remember the original XFL, but I did research, and we all watched the 30 for 30 special. This is the XFL. It's my favorite 30 for 30 film, and I learned so much from it. The old XFL had so many flaws. It bit off more than it could chew. Prime time on NBC, the game sucked, and the players were garbage. McMahon also allowed a WWE crossover, which was a bad idea. And we'll hear Steve's thoughts on this in a second, but Danny continues, I know Steve thinks that the XFL will fail, but personally, McMahon will not make the same mistake twice. In the coming months, we will know more information about the XFL. I think Johnny Manziel will be a part of the XFL, even though McMahon said that anyone with a criminal record won't be able to play in the XFL. I'm excited for it, so I end this post by saying, this is the XFL!
Well, that's one thing. As I was reading the article while were doing your Dan's read, Vince really does not want to be in the forefront of this.
He doesn't.
No, he basically said that he doesn't want to be visible at all.
He's going to provide the money and let the league do the talking for itself.
Let the professionals
handle it.
Do it. Another thing that also I came across that I almost forgot about,
which was
let me see. Okay, it was about salaries. Salaries will be determined, but this is from the ESPN article that recently came out on the XFL. Salaries will be determined, but McMahon said players will make money for winning.
Really?
Quote, to me that makes common sense. Everyone in America lives when they perform. Everyone in America lives when they perform. They get a raise or bonus. That's capitalism.
Which is true.
So that's not a bad idea, though, if you think about it that.
And I think he tried that with the original league, too. Yeah.
No, so basically, the better you perform, like if you're a winning team, your salary as a player, because, again, all the teams are owned by Vince, so there's no incentive for teams doing better, but the players will get more money for being a part
of a winning team. If you win the XFL championship, you get a $20,000 bonus.
I mean, if you think about it, that kind of makes sense. I'm trying to think about like why are you, let's say, like how Odell Beckham wants to be the highest paid player.
Yeah.
Yet he's on a Giants team that hasn't won.
And not only that, but he's pulling stupid antics like pissing on a fire hydrant in the end zone.
It's like if you think about it in the XFL mind, do you think he really deserves all that money?
Yeah, right. Based on Vince's business model, no way.
But if the Patriots have players, let's say it's not happening, but if the Patriots were a team in the XFL and, you know, they keep on winning, more incentive for them to stay with that team is because they keep making money with that same team.
Exactly.
So
do you want to give Steve's thoughts or do you want me to do it?
Yeah, let me give Steve's thoughts.
Go right ahead.
Because we have to talk about the MLB Hall of Fame as well.
Yeah, so let's get into Steve's thoughts.
It will come down to players. The talent level in the NFL sucks balls right now, so I find it hard to believe they will find the talent to keep people interested. Because think about it. No one who can make the NFL is going to the XFL. It will only be NFL rejects and practice squad guys. And like I said, the talent in the NFL currently sucks. So just imagine an entire league filled with players who aren't good enough to make the Browns. You can't survive a few weeks on the hype if you have Manziel and Tebow, but after a while, it's going to lose people's interests. I mean, I'm assuming this league is going to be during the summer. Steve, if you really paid attention, no, it's not. It's going to be in January, February, March.
It started after the Super Bowl.
You think people are going to be making summer plans around XFL games to see a professional league filled with Browns rejects? Again, Steve, it's not in the summer. I find that hard to believe. They'd probably be better off creating an older league like Ice Cube's Basketball League. Names get people to watch. There has to be a lot more than Manziel and Tebow to keep the league alive. They have to go after, like, all-stars just out of retirement players who still have an inkling to play. Maybe even busts who have a nickname, like Jamarcus Russell.
Yeah. Jamarcus Russell.
Yeah, sorry. I did say a nickname.
So if you guys like T.O., Randy Moss, Jamarcus Russell, Ryan Leaf, stuff like that.
God, don't even bring up Ryan Leaf.
Yeah.
I can't believe Steve brought up Jamarcus Russell.
I know. He may be the second biggest bust ever come out of a number one spot after Ryan Leaf.
I mean, who knows? I mean, this is still, I'll say it again, a great opportunity for Vince. I wish him all the best.
So do I. And we're not just saying that as wrestling fans. We're saying that as football fans.
No. I might be a casual, let's say I might become an avid XFL fan, but a casual NFL fan.
Yeah.
Who the hell knows? But like the way that Vince is going about it is really compelling and really interesting to see in these next 2 years.
Yes, it will be. So while Steve was making the argument about players coming out of retirement to play in the XFL, we know a couple of athletes who have just retired who are now getting enshrined in the Hall of Fame.
Okay, retired, what, 7 years ago?
Yeah. So we have guys now getting enshrined into the Hall of Fame. Today was the official announcement,
Yesterday.
Was the official announcement.
Yesterday
for
recording.
For the Hall of Fame induction class in 2018. Four guys are getting in. Those four names, I'm loving this.
Let's start with the lowest percentage that got in.
Yep, and that would be?
Okay, so we have four nominees, as you said. The first one, this was his third year on the ballot. He is Danny's favorite reliever.
Yep, and mine too.
Getting in at 79.9%, Trevor Hoffman.
The king of the blown save, according to Danny, but Hoffman's got good numbers that will back him up. His career starting record isn't that great. He pitched over 1,000 games in the majors, 1,035 to be exact, had a pitching record of 61-75, 2.87 lifetime ERA, 1,133 strikeouts, and the second highest save total count in baseball history at 601. Yeah, it took this long for Trevor Hoffman to get in. I'm happy Hoffman got in. He's one of only five relievers in baseball history to be in the Hall of Fame. They're going to end up getting a six next year, but we'll get to that in a second. The other relievers are Goose Gossage, Hoyt Wilhelm, Raleigh Fingers, and Bruce Sutter, along with the soon-to-be-enshrined Trevor Hoffman that have gotten into the Hall of Fame.
All right. So number three is Jim Tomei. He got in at 89.8%.
And Tomei put up solid numbers in his career.
First year on the ballot.
Yep. Played for a couple of teams during his career, the White Sox, Twins, Dodgers, Orioles, but he's most known for playing for the Phillies and the Cleveland Indians. 2,534 games, 2,328 hits, 612 home runs, 1,699 RBIs, and was a career 276 hitter. You look up the definition of pure power hitter, Jim Tomey's picture is going to be right there underneath the definition, and because of him, we have what is known as the lefty shift with three infielders on the right side of the diamond.
Coming in at the second highest total votes at 92.9. Somehow he made it to the second year of the ballot. He should have been a first ballot Hall of Famer in my eyes.
Agreed.
Vladimir Guerrero.
The greatest bad ball hitter I have ever seen, and that's saying a lot. Just played for Texas and Baltimore his final 2 years, but most people know him for playing with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim and
stupid name.
And the Montreal Expos. 2,147 career games, 2,590 hits, 449 home runs, 1,496 RBIs, and a .318 lifetime hitter. And most people forget this, for as great of a bad ball hitter as Vlad was, I saw him hit a ball that bounced in front of home plate and he still smacked it for a single. But as good of a hitter as Vlad was, people forget, the guy had a great throwing arm from right field. He could nail a guy out at home plate from halfway deep in the right field alley. He was that good of a thrower. Oh,
God, I just remember. I just can envision him throwing out Mets on third base.
I've seen him
going for first to third or triple.
There was a video MLB posted on their Facebook page today. It was a game between Montreal and Toronto in Toronto. Guy singled to center. Vlad catches it. Like, he bounces. Vlad grabs it. He's about halfway deep. He's in about, I don't know, medium right field. Throws the guy out. Dead strike right in the middle of the catcher's chest at the plate to nail a runner. And he beat him by about 3 feet.
Oh, God.
I mean, as much as he used to kill the Mets when he played in Montreal, I love Vlad Guerrero. He's probably my second favorite outfielder of all time behind Ken Griffey Jr. I love Vlad playing. He was fantastic. The guy who got the most votes, however, tortured me.
Yes, with 97.15% of the votes, Larry Chipper Jones.
Yep, and during his
first ballot Hall of Famer.
During his career, won a World Series in 95 with the Braves, spent his entire career in Atlanta, playing 2,499 games all with the Braves, 2,726 hits, 468 home runs, 1,623 RBIs, 303 hitter. He's driven in more runs than any other third baseman in baseball history, and has the second most RBIs by a switch hitter in baseball history. The only guy to drive in more was Eddie Murray.
I'm listening.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, Chipper's also the only switch hitter to have at least 1,000 at-bats, hit over 300 in his career, have over 400 on-base percentage, and have over a 500 slugging percentage in his career. Yes, he never won a gold glove, but he's still probably one of the greatest hitting third basemen to ever play the game. And, of course, as any Met fan can attest to, any Met fan will tell you, and we can certainly tell you, he drove us friggin' crazy.
Yes.
Which is why the middle name of his first child is Shea, for God's sake.
Yep, and that's why he has a seat of Shea Stadium at his house.
Yep.
All right, so here are the notable names that did not make it. And question is, do you think they deserve to be in this Hall of Fame to begin with?
Okay.
All right, so with 70.4%, Edgar Martinez.
We'll get it next year.
You still think so?
Yes.
I believe he has one more year on the ballot.
He does. He fell 20 votes shy this year, but I think Edgar, again, I've always argued this, it depends on who you go up against for Hall of Fame induction, but I think Edgar should get in. Before we go on, the only knock that I think anybody's ever had against Edgar Martinez was he was a career-designated hitter, but he's still one of the greatest hitters of our lifetime.
Yet a good point that I heard on the radio, yet we elect AL pitchers to be in the Hall of Fame.
That's true.
Yet they don't hit on the field.
That's true. That is very true.
So, like, if you say AL hitters don't make it to the Hall of Fame, then why do we select AL pitchers?
Yeah.
So,
good point. All right, so who else on the list?
All right, so after that is Mike Mussina. After his fifth year, he reaches to 63.5%.
Again, it depends on who else is on the ballot, but Moose will eventually get in.
Now we have the two controversial names. With 57.3% and 56.4% respectively, Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds.
And again, I will make this argument to the day I die. I know they haven't been proven guilty of anything, which is why Rafael Palmeiro and Manny Ramirez have not and will never get into the Hall of Fame. Same argument with Sammy Sosa. But as the old saying goes, pictures tell 1,000 words. And if you look at pictures of Roger Clemens from his days in Boston compared to Clemens with his days in Toronto, and then you can make the same argument with Barry Bonds going from his days with the Pirates to his days with the Giants, and you're trying to convince somebody like me that they're not on something, get the hell out of here. Now, if you base it solely on what they did in both Boston and Pittsburgh, respectively, then yes, I would say Clemens, maybe. Clemens has a good shot at it. Bonds would have gotten in based solely what he did on Pittsburgh if he had stayed that way throughout his entire career. But because there was steroid involvement, again, I know it's innocent until proven guilty. Pictures tell 1,000 words. I don't think Bonds is going to get in.
All right, so they have 4 years left on the ballot, and so does this guy with 51.2%, Curt Schilling.
Same thing. I think it's a long shot.
I think he should make it, but the reason is that the media thinks he's a total ass and doesn't want him in.
Yeah.
So that's my guess. All right, so let me just run down by these other names. These are players that probably will not make it since they're all below 50%, but still can trek on. Omar Vizquel has 37% of the ballot.
Good shortstop, but I doubt it.
Larry Walker, his eighth year on the ballot, 34.1%.
Maybe.
Ninth year on the ballot, Fred McGriff with 23.2%.
I don't know.
Second year on the ballot, Manny, 22%.
No way. He's not getting in. He was found guilty of steroid use twice. No.
Jeff Kent, fifth year on the ballot, 14.5%. He's still one of the best hitting second basemen ever. He
Agreed.
Should be higher.
Agreed.
But again, he was an ass to the media.
Yeah, which is what's keeping him out.
With 11.1%, fourth year on the ballot, Gary Sheffield.
Doubt it.
Billy Wagner still on the ballot with 11.1% as well, third year on the ballot.
Good closer, but I doubt it.
Scott Rowland, a first year on the ballot, 10.2%.
Solid chance, but I don't know.
6 year on the ballot, somehow still on, 7.8%, Sammy Sosa.
But Sosa's going to drop off after next year, I can guarantee you
first
that.
First year on the ballot with a 7.3, Andrew Jones.
Probably going to drop off.
And these are the names that didn't make it. Either first year, yeah, all these
yeah,
first,
all first year guys.
All the first year guys that didn't make it, Jamie Moyer, Johan Santana.
I was a little depressed about that.
Johnny
but...
Damon, Hideki Matsui, Chris Carpenter, Kerry Wood, Carlos Lee, Levon Hernandez.
They all got votes, by the way.
They all got votes, and these are the names that did not get votes on the Hall of Fame. Brad Lidge, Kevin Millwood, Aubrey Huff, Jason Isringhausen, Orlando Hudson, Carlos Zambrano.
And Zambrano was a pretty good hitting pitcher.
All right, so before we run out of time, let's go to the look forward to the next year's potential Hall of Fame ballot.
Yeah, and looking at some of the first-time names, oh my God, so, this is a loaded group.
Yep, so we got all the names already going into it, but the first-year potentials...
Let's see.
Okay, so no, Matt, let me read the names
all right.
And give me a yes for a first year or eventual.
Yes, like, eventually or no.
No, yes, eventual... Not gonna. It's gonna stay for 10 years and not gonna make it, or no.
Okay, good.
No meaning. Even though, like,
not gonna make it at all.
Not gonna make it even if they reach it to their 10th year.
Go ahead.
Mariano Rivera.
Yes. Not even close. Yes.
Roy Halladay. Rest in peace.
May he rest in peace. Good chance at it. Yes. Probably not gonna get in first year, but we'll get in eventually.
Todd Helton.
Same thing. We'll get in eventually. I think.
Andy Pettit.
I don't know. That's a long shot.
Lance Berkman.
Same thing, long shot.
Roy Oswalt.
Good chance to get in.
Miguel Tejada.
No.
Placido Polanco. Freddy Garcia. Kevin Youkilis.
Greek God of Walks, but no.
Derek Lowe.
No.
Vernon Wells.
No.
Ted Lilly.
No.
Travis Hafner.
Might hang around a couple years on the ballot, but I doubt it.
One of the best Mets of all time, Jason Bay.
Yeah, right.
Michael Young.
We can stop now. Everybody else is pretty much a no.
No, but still. Let's hear the potential names here.
Okay.
Ryan Dempster.
No.
John Garland.
No.
Ramon Hernandez.
No.
Darren Oliver.
No.
There's only Juan Pierre.
No. Although I'll give MLB's credit for keeping going with those are great.
Octavio Dotel.
No.
Jake Westbrook.
I wish, but no. No, well, I don't even wish that. No.
We should have said, are they even going to get a vote at this point?
Yeah.
Jose Contreras.
No.
And good old Yordi Torreabla. Torreabla.
No.
All right, so there you go.
Like I said, it depends on who you're going in against. Mo may break Griffey's record.
He has a great chance of breaking that record, indeed. With right now 99.3%, that is really going to be a great sight to behold if he gets 100%.
Yeah, Mo may be the only one who actually does it.
Yep.
Mo's going to get it.
Yeah, somehow Edgar Martinez is not going to make it next year.
That's going to be a damn travesty if that doesn't happen.
Yeah, because you're giving 100% to a reliever.
Yeah, I know.
Anyways.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the look ahead to the Baseball Hall of Fame. Did they get it right? Yeah. On that note, we have run out of time for this episode of the show, right? All right, so we'd like to remind everybody that you can follow us on various forms of social media, facebook.com/SollySteveOnSports. You can also find us on Twitter at @S_S_Sports. All the latest shows are on iTunes. Everything else can be found on SoundCloud. Follow us on the blog, ssnsports.blogspot.com. Until we tee it up again next week, for everybody working hard behind the scenes and for Jeff, I'm Sally. We'll see you next week.